Hello there, friends. It's your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you are listening to Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast. The Broadway Cast is a weekly talk show that brings the pages of Playbill to life and delivers it directly to theater fans around the world. Every episode will feature breaking Broadway news and exclusive stories from notable Broadway personalities. Additionally, The Broadway Cast gives a voice to fans like they've never had before. Today, we welcome the men of Waitress, Will Swenson, who's back in the show, Chris Fitzgerald, and Matt DeAngelis is joining us. But before we dive into that delicious slice of man pie, we're going to check in with senior features editor from Playbill, Ruthie Fearberg, who's going to give us our much-needed Playbill Pulse. Hi, Ruthie.
Hi, Ben.
Good to see you.
It's always good to see
you. I know.
I'm always happy to be here. I'm always happy that there's Broadway news.
There's always Broadway news.
It's always Broadway news.
It feeds the soul.
It does. It feeds the soul, much like a good slice of pie, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely.
How exciting, speaking of pie, that Will Swenson is back in Waitress.
He is.
As of September 12th.
Yep.
This is exciting.
This is very exciting. He is one of Broadway's most celebrated actors at this stage of the game.
Indeed, he is. And there's other exciting pie related news.
Tell me, what's in the pie?
Off-Broadway's Sweeney Todd has extended into 2018.
That's delicious.
So if you haven't gone down to the Barrow Street Theater, which they have converted into a pie shop so you can have your meat pies or your vegetarian pies, as it were, before seeing the show, which is a fully immersive production, it's really cool. I saw it even before Norm Lewis and Carolee Carmello joined it.
Yeah.
And the production values are amazing. But you and I also had some feeding of the soul last week. At the Cheetah Rivera Awards.
The first ever.
The first ever. They were formerly known as the Astaire Awards for Fred and Adele Astaire. But we had some big winners, and it was kind of cool to have the dance community come together, just the dance community. And
it sure was.
You know, we were celebrating the lifetime achievement of Tommy Tune and the directorial excellence of Diane Paulus. But we also saw winners for Josh Bergas with Off-Broadway Sweet Charity, and Andy Blankenbuehler racked up yet another for Bandstand. Which we were sad to see go, but at least he and that choreography got its due for sure.
You know what I loved about that? I love the celebration of the ensembles.
And the great Comet cast won their
All
most
heart.
Outstanding ensemble. It was
whiskey
really
in the belly.
Really, really special.
Yeah.
And speaking of the community coming together, Broadway Loves Houston is an upcoming concert for the rebuilding of the theater districts and the theater community in Houston, among the many other things that need to be supported right now down
Fantastic.
In Texas. That concert is going to be October 9th, and we have just added such performers as Bandstand's Corey Cott, Tony Winner, Brian Soakes Mitchell, Jesse Mueller has already been announced, Leslie Margarita, Seth Rudetsky is hosting and providing the musical direction. So it's going to be a really beautiful evening of song and support.
I love how the Broadway community always circles around
always.
The community
really
supports itself and
dependable
each other.
That way. So go to playbill.com for more information and for ways to donate to that cause. It's really special. And I'd be remiss in terms of special things if I didn't mention that Miss Patti LuPone is releasing a two-disc album called Don't Monkey with Broadway. It's going to drop September 29th.
That is my favorite title of an album since Hoobastank released Hoobastank.
And there you have it.
Thank you so much, Ruthie.
Always a pleasure.
We love having you here. We will talk to you next week for more of The Pulse. All right, now, friends, without further ado, let's get on with the show.
The show.
The show.
Give my regards to Broadway.
A lullaby of Broadway.
There's a kid in the middle of nowhere who's sitting there living for Tony performances, singing and flipping along with the Pippins and Wickets and Kinkies, Matildas and Mormonses. So we might reassure that kid and do something to spur that kid. Because I promise you, all of us up here tonight, we were that kid and now we're big.
I like that every single time because it's just plain old-fashioned true. Hello, my friends. It's your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you are listening to Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast. Today's show is lit. It's turnt. It's whatever the millennials say that means good or cool as we welcome the men of Waitress to our panel. And I think we should get right to it. Originally scheduled to be here was Drew Gehling, and he's sadly unable to be here with us. But we are thrilled that we get to talk to the man seated to my immediate left who's appeared in Hair
in the West End. It's Tour of the Country and American Idiot. And once, this is my very good friend and savior of the day, Mr. Matt DeAngelis.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Matt.
How are you doing?
We talked about this a couple weeks back about the idea of Hair going to the West End. What was the experience of taking a Broadway show and taking the entire thing and transferring it to London?
The experience of a lifetime. I mean, yeah. I had to travel with this guy, which was a real burden. But other than that, no, it was so special. You never get the opportunity to take a full company of your friends who you work with here in New York and go overseas. It, you know, an actor gets to do it here or there, but it was really such a blessing. It was amazing.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
Yeah, it was certainly new to us.
It was nice because we didn't have to rehearse.
Yeah, that was actually, we had more time to explore when we first got there, which was nice.
More fish and chips.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And that's what we're looking for. Seated next to Mr. Matt DeAngelis, one of Broadway's most accomplished leading men, having appeared on Broadway in Lestat, 110 in the Shade, Brooklyn, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, as Tick, starred as Javert in Les Mis.
You led with Lestat?
I led with Lestat. Well, I'll tell you what.
That's impressive, bro.
Yeah, that's the work.
True. Come on.
That's the work.
No one can pull that off like you.
When Jason Robert Brown was here, I led with Urban Cowboy, which he got a great big kick out of as well. As I mentioned, Javert in a little show called Les Mis. Saw Broadway in Rock of Ages, Little Miss Sunshine, Murder Ballad, and now back in Waitress as Earl, Mr. Will Swenson.
Yes. Will Swenson.
Yep. Will Swenson. That's correct, isn't
that's
it?
Right,
Will
that's Swenson. Correct. He never remembers
no.
who I am.
I call him Will Swanson.
Will Swanson?
Yeah.
Is that because you want a frozen dinner of some sort?
Yeah, because he's just a big old beefy.
Oh, he's a big old beefy.
Does that remind him of a chicken pot pie?
He's the beef stew of the Broadway community. Yeah. People have been saying that for years. Yeah. Little known fact, I'm going to tell our listeners, Will and I are from the same
place.
Hometown.
That's right.
His family runs a theater called the Hale Center Theater, which, as I remember, was a small theater in the Round in Orem.
Yes.
And I used to do shows there when I was a kid. And now they've got like a huge, beautiful main stage and all kinds of amazing things.
There's a couple of theaters. Yeah, there's a Salt Lake Theater. And then my brother runs the one in Provo. Yeah.
I think I ran into your brother at Costco the last time I was home visiting my family.
No, that's fascinating.
What did you buy? Yeah.
Was it a picnic?
Huh? I think I was going in for, my mom needed some toothpaste in bulk. And I got a chicken roll at the
thing. Yeah, because the food,
those are good.
You can get like the big wieners as well.
Yeah.
Like,
for 50 cents.
Yeah, and like an ice cream sundae that's like this big.
Yeah, and it's 75 cents. Yep.
They pay
and no
you
harm.
To take the ice cream.
Yeah, no harm, no foul.
They also have the cheesy balls, like the cheese balls in a tub.
We had those at the backstage at Waitress.
That is true.
What do they go for, do you think? What's the price point on a giant barrel of cheese balls?
$1.70 maybe?
$1.70. And it's really good for the voice, which is why you have the backstage at Waitress. You pop a cheese ball, and you're like, oh, I'm ready to sing now.
Mm-hmm.
And rounding out our panel.
Tell me about me, Ben. Tell me about me.
I would love to tell you about you.
Let's get to it. What's he going to lead with?
You were the OG Bach in Wicked. He's appeared in Amour, started in Finian's Rainbow on Broadway, for which he won a Drama Desk Award. Mm. Appeared in Act of God, Igor in Young Frankenstein. Critic plays Ogie in Waitress. This is Chris Fitzgerald.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Nice to see you.
Nice to be seen.
Yeah,
here with
you. It's been a while, my friend. I remember you backstage doing things. I like you balancing a stool on your chin at one point. Tell the people a little bit about your clowning training that you have had in your life.
Wow.
I know that it happened in Maine. I got that far.
Wow, that's good. Yeah, I grew up in Maine, and my mother, to save her sanity, put me into a clown class at age 5.
She knew then.
Yeah, because it was just she
I mean,
and
you're really
I.
Born
and
a clown.
She was,
it's
yeah,
not something you choose.
I was born a ham.
DNA has proven that now. They can prove that on SVU.
Yes. I was fascinated by all things like clowning and vaudeville and like all that kind of stuff. And there was this whole community of people in Maine doing all this crazy stuff, and I just got involved in it.
Yeah. How has it affected your career? How have you been able to utilize those tools?
I try to put some kind of trick in every single thing that I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's like, you know, if I can balance a chair on my face in every show, I would.
Right.
You know, it's not always appropriate.
You know what?
The Merchant of Venice, I couldn't find a place for it.
What about in Waitress the Musical?
What's your trick in Waitress?
I did, actually. Yeah. I had a thing where when I bring the pies, I was like, I can balance the pies on my face.
Yeah.
And Diane was like, maybe that's not the best idea. And I was like, okay.
And she's prone to trickery. She likes tricks in the show.
He had his magic friends come and do a magic show for us.
Yeah, I had some friends of mine come and do a magic show for the company.
Do you have have friends that are just your magic friends? Do you compartmentalize that?
Yeah, I don't.
Like,
yeah.
Guys, listen, my magic friends are coming.
And we had the party, and like nobody showed up, but he sort of interacted with just the space around him. It was great.
With his magic friends. Oh, it's too bad we're having an absolutely terrible time on the Broadway Cast, brought to you by Cheesy Puffs in a Barrel. So we like to have a little fun, like we're not already here at the Broadway Cast. We like to start out with a little bit of a game. And, you know, working together on stage, you get very, very close, get to learn a lot about each other, sometimes almost too much. So we're going to play just a quick round of super superlatives, where I'm going to give you a superlative, and each of you are going to decide who that best represents, or who best fits the bill, as it were. Let's start. We'll start really cheesy. Who among you is most likely to make out with Audra McDonald?
Chris Fitzgerald.
Fair. Great, moving on. We all agree, it's Chris Fitzgerald. Who's most likely to leave the theater and play professional football?
Matt.
Matt D'Angelo.
Matt, sure. Why are they saying that about you?
That dude's head is so hard.
Is that what it is?
It's unbelievable. He rides around on a little unicycle.
He's also had multiple concussions.
That is very true.
And he keeps coming back. It's a little
weirdly, it's made him a really great singer. Ever since the accident.
Better ever since the accident. Yeah. Way more talented.
Like a savant.
It's very light in the piazza. Who is most likely to become a hot R&B superstar?
Ooh, this one.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Chris Fitzgerald?
Probably
like
me.
Like an alter ego?
Probably me.
Why are they saying that about you?
Because that is something I'm actually pursuing.
You're pursuing? Are you? Yeah. Chris sings your favorite soul classics is coming your way?
It's not even your favorite. I'm writing some stuff.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
What's your favorite song?
It's all
song?
About, like, jelly and jam and things like that. Yeah.
Things you need to shake.
Yeah.
And be ready for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who's most likely to leave the commercial theater and devote their life to experimental theater?
Also this one.
Also, yeah.
I'm going to have to give that to Chris and his magic friends.
Yeah, I'll take that. Yes. My magic friends and my...
That's the name of your theater company downtown.
My R&B career. I'm going to mesh them.
Uh-huh. Mesh them together. Okay.
Into a show.
Who's most likely to become a celebrity chef?
I think Will. Maybe Matt.
Do you think it's Will?
My fiance cooks. I'm a terrible cook.
Oh, then it's Will.
It's Will.
It's Matt's fiance.
It's Matt's fiance, Christine Dwyer.
It's also Will's hair kind of makes it...
Yeah. You look like a celebrity.
I'd put on like an accent and I would be like...
Yeah, you would just be all... And people would want to see
you cook Brown's hash.
See?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
I didn't think I'd hear you say hash today, but I'm so very...
At least not in this context.
That's the parsley. Who's most likely among you to play the Phantom of the Opera?
Will.
Definitely Will.
That's Will.
And aren't you when you start
baritone
rehearsals like in
I started
March.
Yesterday.
Did you
going in tonight?
You are. That's so fast.
It's weird. I'm doing the both.
But you're very talented.
Yeah.
That brings me to who's most likely to play Christine in Phantom of the Opera?
Oh, that's Matt. Certainly.
Sure. Probably Matt.
Is it Matt? Yeah. Why would you say that?
I gotta tell you, I've done drag before, and I am not a good looking woman. It's really an unfortunate.
No.
Situation.
Do you know what?
Not you.
I believe you.
No.
But he has the notes. He has the notes, though.
The notes.
I like this line of questioning. I'm gonna give you a couple more. I like this leading ladies thing. Who among you is most likely to be the most successful Dolly Levi?
Oh, yeah, that's Chris.
Is that Chris Fitzgerald?
Yeah.
He just said he sat there with such confidence and went, duh.
Yeah. Duh.
Parade. Who's most likely to play Ava Perone?
I'll go with Swenson.
You think?
Yeah, probably Swenson.
Swenson, fair enough.
All right.
Who's the Sandy and Grease of you?
That's great.
That's I'll go with totally.
That for sure.
Why are you so confident about that? Everybody's like, oh. Ding,
you know
ding,
why? Because he has a kind of openness and a clarity.
He
has an emotional clarity.
He's a soprano.
And an innocence about him. He hasn't tapped into enough, and I feel like he would be an amazing Sandy.
I'm keeping the beard, for sure.
The emotional quality of kind of the way he would play it would be wonderful.
Sure.
Well, that's our super superlative. Yay! Let's start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. I'd like to ask each of you to fill us in on what were your very influences in the theater. Like, when do you remember sitting in a theater and looking up at the stage and saying, that's me. That's what I'm looking to do. Let's start with you, Matt DeAngelis.
Did my first show when I was 8 years old. My mom dragged me to the audition because I wouldn't stop singing at the house. She needed to put me somewhere. And and it was Godspell at the high school. They needed kids to be in this production of Godspell. And so I caught the bug then, but I had a really formative moment a few years later when that production of Children of Eden came out that was at Paper Mill, and then it went to North Shore Music Theater, which is right around the corner from my house in Boston. Uh-huh. And when Darius DeHaas sang Lost in the Wilderness, I was like, yeah. That's what I want to do. And when that song came out, I remember every single tenor was like freaking out.
Oh, forget it.
It was such a game changer.
I work in piano bars. That's a favorite, yeah, for sure.
I just saw him in the show at the Public, the Public Works show that they just did, and
the big celebration.
Yeah, and he's still incredible, and it was so cool to see him on stage again after, you know, probably 15 years or so, more than that, right?
You're like, you made me who
yeah,
I am.
It was really cool.
Will Swenson, what do you remember?
I was growing up in Los Angeles, and it was a production of Annie, and we went, and they started singing Maybe Far Away, and I turned to my mom, apparently. I don't really remember. And I said, I want to be down there. And she always told that story. I knew you were going to be an actor because you said you wanted to be down there. And I was like, Mom, I just wanted to be surrounded by girls.
Yeah. Like, if it means I have to play Annie, that's what I'll do.
No, I do remember thinking that was awesome. And
Chris Fitzgerald, what's your earliest memory?
I think it would be there was a community theater in South Portland, Maine called the Portland Players, or as you say it in my accent, the Portland Players.
Uh-huh. I've seen shows there.
Yeah. And it was Man of La Mancha, but I specifically remember the guy who has the thing on his head.
Don Quixote?
No, yeah. The wash basin. No, not yeah, Don Quixote. Was
Sancho Panza?
No.
The Golden Helmet of Mambrino.
That's the one. I remember being obsessed with that song and that guy, that particular performer. I don't know who it was, but yeah, he was really funny and he was really interesting. And it was like, what, he had one scene in the whole show? But I was like, that's fantastic. He's great. And so I just... That's kind of like my first little cloudy memory of seeing that.
And you are so funny. When do you remember first making people laugh, Chris? And because that could be so intoxicating.
Yeah, it's very intoxicating. It's a drug for me. I'm not happy unless... Oh, look, I got to laugh. Okay.
Yes, okay. All right, Matt's still laughing.
Right, no, I was, again, it was back to doing kind of vaudeville and clowning and doing that kind of stuff early on that that whole thing started to begin.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was in a play then at Portland Players, Oliver, when I was 8, and I was one of the little Fagin's kids or one of the gang, and I had a little bowler hat. And I just took over the show. I mean, I literally took over the show. And there was like, I remember even reading reviews, or my mom said, and it was like, you know, the kid in the bowler hat is crazy and like amazing, and he's so silly, and you know. And then the guy playing Fagin took me aside and was just like, you know, when it's my turn, it's my turn, and when it's your turn, it's your turn. And I was like, okay.
Well, what was your first memory of getting up on the stage?
Oh, well, my family runs a theater, so it was like, I literally played, you know, in Christmas Carol, the Ghost of Christmas Present, I think, brings out the two orphan kids.
Oh, yeah.
Ignorance and one. I was ignorance when I was like 3. I mean, I have hazy memories of kind of going, what's going on?
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty early.
Yeah, that is pretty early. Yeah. When was the first time you spoke on a stage?
Like then.
A couple weeks ago.
I made up my own lines.
I think then we did a production of like Hans Christian Andersen, and I think I was, you know, Thumbelina or something. I don't know.
That's a role people are dying to see you in.
My Thumbelina was fantastic and my first cross-dressing role.
So just take me from these early influences and childhood memories. What was kind of the road to Broadway for each of you?
I took a really circuitous route. I played college basketball for a little while. I always did theater, but I...
Hashtag butch.
See? I did that for a little while and then very quickly realized I couldn't manage an NCAA basketball schedule and a theater degree. So I then looked into transferring. I was still majoring in theater at University of Southern Maine. And then I transferred to Boston Conservatory, but college wasn't really for me at that moment in my life. So I left school early and moved to New York at 20. I've been in New York for 14 years now, which is weird to think about. And it took me a long time to kind of figure it out. Like school hard knocks, I guess. But 6.5 or 7 years later, after I moved here, I was in hair with this fella.
Yeah.
And then I've sort of figured it out from there.
What's the moment when you get the phone call? And, you know, we always joke that ring, 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 it's Broadway calling.
I'll never forget it for as long as I live. I had just done a production of Hair out of town, and they had an audition, and it was like one of those, it was on a Saturday morning down at the Public, and my friend Kyle Harris, who's now on that show, Stitchers. He was playing Claude in that production. He came to the audition with me, and he's so talented. I was like, oh, I'm not going to get this job because Kyle's going to get it. And we went across the street after the audition to Supenberger down there by NYU, and I got a call at the table that I was going to get an offer with Kyle, and he was so wonderful and supportive, and it was amazing. And And then I was trying to be really respectful. I didn't want to like really celebrate because I felt bad for my friend and whatever. And so we were walking to the subway and I was in that crosswalk. And I always think about this when I drive down that street now or go to the public. I was in that crosswalk and I was like, I just got to call my mom. And now I had just borrowed money from her at 26 years old and that she didn't have. And I was like, I can't be an actor anymore. You know, I really, really can't. And I was like, I got to call Janice. And I called her and I said, hey, mom, are you sitting down? Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to be on Broadway. And we both just started crying. I mean, I just wept in the middle of the street because I was at that point, you know, that cliche point that actors, you know, talk about sometimes that like I literally was looking at apartments online in Orlando, Florida, because I wanted to be an actor still, but I couldn't afford to live in New York anymore. And I was going to go work at Disney or something.
Yeah.
And I got the call.
And you wept.
And I wept.
Will, what was the road for you?
I cried too. I mean, I grew up in a theater family, and I majored in theater and then eventually musical theater. And then I got my equity card at Disney World. And then I toured Europe with you in a really not great musical. And then I got a U.S. tour of Miss Saigon. And then I moved to New York and pounded the pavement for 4.5 years.
Yeah.
And then I went and auditioned for Brooklyn the musical, and John McDaniel and James Samplener.
Yep.
Gave me my first Broadway show, and I almost missed the callback. The reason that I went to the callback was because I was supposed to fly out to work on something, probably in Utah, and there was an ice storm the night before, and they canceled my flight. So I wasn't going to be able to go to the callback. So because of this ice storm and because I missed my flight, I went to the callback and then finally got the show. So it was like,
that's awesome,
like a gift from God. But
that's always fun when you can go back and connect the dots,
right?
You don't go, oh, thank you, Jesus, for the ice storm.
Yeah,
yeah, Chris.
I went to college in Florida. I grew up in Maine and then...
So it's too cold.
Too cold. Went to college in Florida. I went to Rollins College. They have a great... got a great scholarship to go there and studied theater and English there. And then went on to grad school at American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. And during that time, I also started... I was an apprentice at Williamstown.
Okay.
Theater Festival, which is an amazing place, and began a kind of relationship with that place that I've been there for, 13 or 14 summers I've spent there.
Wow.
And began developing relationships there while I was also kind of still studying. And so kind of by the time I moved to New York, I had kind of this interesting community that I had developed. And some were people that were working or directors or casting people. And so that kind of helped that launch for me when I got here. And, you know, I hadn't been doing any musicals really, or studying in them in particular. I didn't study musical theater at all. But I kind of thought, well, that'll be what I'll probably end up doing. And then I moved here and then one of my first jobs was an usher at the music,
oh, wow.
at the Music Box Theater.
I love that.
They were doing Diary of Anne Frank with Natalie Portman. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then one of my first Broadway job was a Moor at the Music Box Theater, which is kind of
That's such a cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's a cool full circle moment.
And I still go in and see some of the guys that are still there. Yeah.
I'm interested in you saying you've never really studied musical theater. When were you singing all along throughout your...
Yeah, I sang like a little... I sang in an a cappella group that me and two of my friends formed in high school.
Please tell me the name of the a cappella group.
The A Cappella Fellas.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
Rhymes.
It was pretty badass.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was actually really fun.
Did you challenge other a cappella groups to fights and stuff?
Yeah.
In the street.
Yeah. Because we would, you know, we kicked a lot of ass, man.
Yeah. Lots of chicks.
But but it was really fun and really kind of, we just kind of created this thing. And it was not just us singing, it was us doing, you know, kind of stand up stuff and skits. And it became this kind of thing that we did. And we made a little album. And it was really, it was because we just loved to do it. And so it was like that kind of singing really changed actually how I feel like I am a singer. I really started to enjoy it as opposed to kind of doing it for musical theater. I just sang what I wanted, when I wanted, how I wanted, and it was that was really cool. So I did that for a while, and then but I didn't really do that many musicals. And when my first job was at the Public. Doing a play, and then I got another play, and I was just doing plays for a while, yeah. And then did my first
musicals like you.
The first musical thing I did was at Encores.
Yeah.
The Babes in Arms, directed by Kathleen Marshall, and that's where I met my wife, Jessica Stone.
So in a fit of branding moment, do you guys remember what the experience is of first opening a Playbill? You looking there and seeing your name, what is that experience like? Will?
Oh, seeing your name? Well, I used to collect them. I had this coffee table. I still have this coffee table that's a glass center and a wood frame, and you can open it up and put things in. And for the longest time, just about every show I saw, I threw my Playbills in the thing. And I remember somebody coming over to my house once and knew that I was an actor, but they were clueless about theater. And they were like, have you been in all of these? And I was like, no, I haven't been in
any. I do a new one every other week.
Yeah, right? And I remember being really sad about that. And then over the years, eventually, now it's filled with all shows that I've been in. And so that's been a cool progression that involves Playbill.
Yeah, it's right to the camera.
I'm super sentimental in general, and I get everything framed, and I mean, I'm literally out of wall space at my apartment, and Christine makes fun of me all the time, but I am still, after all these years, impressed by the magic of theater, and we all, you know, spent our lives wanting to be right where we are, and it's the coolest thing, you know, like when they say it's Saturday Night on Broadway, that gives me chills still. It's, you know, and you open up a Playbill and you see your face. It's the weirdest thing, and it's such a blessing to do it. But I'm a pretty sentimental guy as it is, so I got Playbill stuff all over my house.
Yeah.
Mr. Fitzgerald?
I'm always curious about how they're going to fit my full name, Christopher Fitzgerald, in the Playbill.
Yeah.
It's a very long name.
Oh, yeah, and it's a column. So does it go Christopher Fitzgerald?
Yeah. Like, how do you do it? And they've been very creative.
They wrote it vertically for a while.
They've written it vertically. They've, you know.
He does an acrostic poem for his bio.
Just abbreviate it. It's just like.
Turn it into a haiku.
Fitz. Yeah.
See Fitz. That's very on trend these days. Are you in a show? I know you are. Do you want to add some Broadway flair to your school or community theater production? Well, Playbuilder lets you build your very own Broadway quality Playbill program. Each Playbill is fully customizable for your production. Dates, song title, cast names, production credits, artwork, and even advertising. It's a great way to promote your show, raise money for your organization, and create a professional, printable program. Save valuable time with Playbuilder Express. Select from thousands of pre-populated programs in our database and simply begin to customize your production's Playbill. Visit Playbuilder.com to learn how you can create your own Playbill today. Let's talk about being actors a little bit, and I'll start with you, Will. As you've done so many super varied roles, what's ground zero for approaching a new role?
Oh, I don't know. It feels like every one of them's different, and you can't start from the same place. At least that's how it is for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Sometimes it starts with research, and sometimes it starts with just like an idea or an emotion. YouTube, I feel like, has been a big resource. I don't know. Do you guys do you? I just feel like, I don't know.
How so? How do you mean?
I mean, for this role, my character's pretty troubled, and there's some emotional abuse in the show and borderline physical abuse. And with YouTube, it's just a resource you didn't have before. You just kind of go, abusive husband. And then you find, you know, crazy talk shows or just, and you see actual guys, you know, who are troubled and treating their wives awfully, and so you lose that idea, that mustache twisting villain thing, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is just a guy who looks like me and talks like me, and he just has terrible impulse control and terrible ideas about how relationships work. And I don't know, for me that's become a good resource, but I don't always do that. I don't know, it's different
for each thing. Chris Fitzgerald?
Will kind of put it, you know, it really is, the approaches vary. I'd say for me, especially in musicals, I have to be physical.
Yeah.
I have to, like, really get, like, I have to just dive in and kind of get physical to kind of unlock my idea factory. I almost have to get out in front of what I'm doing. And that's where little surprises happen that end up being the kind of foundation for where I'm going, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I will say, having seen Waitress fairly recently, it's incredible what you do physically in your big number. It's bonkers. Was that a lot of trial and error? Do you just, like, throw it out there?
Yeah, you guys weren't around when that happened. Yeah, it was really... it was really fun and really hard. It was really hard work. And I
Do you come in with a bunch of ideas in a bag ready to go?
I come in with a few, and this was a very unique experience. Creating like that number was like trying to marry some ideas that Diane and Lauren, the choreographer, had brought with kind of the approach that I wanted to take, and we kind of had to kind of massage that a little bit. And then it was, what's really fun about Diane and Lauren is that they were basically just like, just go, whatever, you know, whatever's on your mind, let's try it.
Yeah.
And that's not always the case, nor should it always be the case. You know, sometimes a choreographer has some very specific movement that they want you to do, and that and you need to fill that out, you know, and that's really also a wonderful experience. But this particular song and this particular part of the show really needed that, and so it was just a lot of trial and error, just a lot of silly, stupid ideas. I mean, I literally had thousands of really bad ideas, and then it's like kind of chipping away and crafting it down. And for me, it was
to one bad idea,
to one big bad idea, which is Chris doing this number on Broadway.
Foolproof bad idea.
But I think I annoyed members of my company and maybe even the director and choreographer.
Will's not
because
nodding.
I just
yes,
kept wanting to work on it, and I was like, I'm not satisfied. And finally they were just like,
we have
to stop. Yeah. But seriously, I just was never satisfied.
To that end, do you feel like in some of the other physical roles you've done that you've brought some of the things you've learned from that? I'm referencing maybe Igor.
Absolutely.
Into that?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, it's really been a process of finding out the best, how I work, and having the courage to work the way I need and want to work, where I feel like it's successful. And that means listening. That means trusting my impulses and sharing the way that I come up with ideas and finding those ideas and, you know, fighting for them.
Yeah.
Trusting. It's hard. It's hard. And, you know, and just not being satisfied, really making sure that you're like, this is really the way I want it to be. Because in theater, you got to then do it. You know, eight times a week. Now years.
Yeah.
And so you really do want to say, this is really, you know,
something
I changed
like
my,
do.
Yeah, yeah. I had some idea where I changed my mic because we wear little face mics.
Uh-huh.
And so in the first act, most of my stuff is I'm looking stage right. And so we put the mic on the left side, and then it was like, I'm kind of looking the other way. Maybe we switch it. So now I got to switch my mic every show. And it's such a drag.
I didn't know.
Eight times a week. Yeah, I know. It's called
that's
the magic.
Be a bit fun,
you're talking about the magic of theater.
Yeah. And somebody's got to help you with that, too, which means you get a little copy feeling in the middle of the
show.
It's
like when you're like, you know,
extra zing.
It's like, who's got tricks?
Eugene.
Like in auditions, you know, people have like backflips and stuff. And you're like, not me, eight times a week.
Yeah.
Nope. A lot of dancers will do that, too.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, I'm fabulous and I could be in Cats. All right, do you tumble? No. But I just saw you on the Olympics.
Nope.
Not eight times a week. I'm going to turn the question to you, Matt. As you have played multiple roles in Waitress, and how do you balance making each different and bring yourself to each role as an actor?
I guess my
because the roles that you have played, you've done.
I've done Pomander and I've done Earl a bunch of times. I've done Pomander once, which was a shot out of a cannon kind of moment.
Just trying to say.
I don't really get too deep into the process. For my, like, I don't really have like a finite, you know, one of those types of setups for myself. But there's a quote that I've always really liked. It's like, I think it's Clark Gable. At least it's attributed to him widely. It's like, you know, how are you such a good actor? He said, I don't know. I just try to hit my mark, look him in the eye, and tell the truth. And I think that, like, Will hit it right on the head. Like, to play Earl like a villain is a mistake. It makes him shallow. It makes him not relatable. Like, you know, anybody. There are people out there in the audience who have difficult family lives too, and they'll relate to that sort of a dynamic between parents or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to reach down and just go, when I read the script, I try to see where I find truth first. Like what just makes intellectual sense to me as I read it. Mm-hmm. And I build it from there usually, because if it doesn't make sense or feel truthful to you reading it, you have to really get deep to perform it well. If you don't find it truthful.
If you don't believe it, how are they going to believe it?
Yeah.
Kind of thing, right?
Yeah. But switching was really hard. Pomander is a whole different ballgame. I've been very fortunate. I've played a lot of silly roles and fun things, and in great shows that I'm very proud of, but Pometer was by far the biggest workload I've ever had on a stage. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that it was on Broadway, but three huge songs and being a part of the romantic arc of the show and all those scenes and the comedy, which the comedy that I usually get cast in is a little different than the comedy that Pometer is asked to do in the show. So it was a really fun, challenging moment to do that.
Is there something to, or a key to career longevity, to maintaining in this business? Is there a key to keeping your head on straight throughout all of it?
It's really hard. I mean, it's an impossible task, really, in many ways. And there is no key. There is no way. Every person's journey is completely different.
Yeah.
But I think understanding yourself, having some real faith in what you're doing and how you approach what you do, can help keep you moving forward. I mean, I feel like showing up is the hardest thing and the essential thing. You have mm-hmm. to show up, and that means in rehearsal, that means mm-hmm. in auditions, and remembering that you are not alone. Remembering that you are that anyone who's going on this journey is having similar experiences, and but to me, the thing that just keeps me going is I just keep showing up, and have started to kind of really understand how I work and how I like to work, and also just meeting great people and working with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Absolutely, what Chris said.
Yeah.
You need to stay positive. Like, it's really easy to be that negative voice that just sort of starts to spiral down. And in every show, you're just like, oh, well, there's where the negativity is going to come from. And it can be toxic in a cast. But I like what Matt said, just, showing up and being a nice person.
Yeah.
I've seen people lose jobs in the audition room. They were the best person that came in and then have the team go, yeah, they were probably the best, but that energy is not something that's going to be good for this, and they'll hire somebody who's slightly less talented.
I think that's completely wrong.
That's a true story.
When I first met, it was nastiest wants it the most.
When I first met Will, when I first started with Hair, when I first met Will, and Gavin actually gave me this little nugget, like he does. He gives sprinkles.
His nemesis.
He's Salt Bae with his knowledge bombs. But he, that's for the millennials out there.
Didn't understand it, sports.
No, so, never mind. Anyway, he said, welcome. He was very sweet. And he said, getting your first job is really, really hard. And it is, because you're competing with long odds and other really, really talented people and type and all these things. Getting your second job is way harder because you're competing with all of those things and your own reputation, which is not nothing. It's absolutely true.
Yeah. I'm fascinated with the live aspect of theater, and I'm crazy about onstage mishaps and flubs. So maybe specifically to the waitress experience, can you fill us in on your most epic flubs?
Yeah. Chris, you go first, because you mess up all the time.
I do. I try to mess up on purpose to give my, to
kind of
keep it interesting. I mean, this wasn't really a flub. This was a risk that I took that paid off gravely. You saw it.
I was going to tell the same story. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen on a stage in my life. Go ahead.
I have a moment where I bump into a table. I'm a bumbly, geeky guy, and I am nervous, and I bump into a table. And and basically, I kind of don't hit it very hard, and I kind of gather the things, and then I move on. It's just a little kind of like a passing little beat. And one day I really hit the table. I was a little too close to it, and I really hit the table, and a fork fell off the table. And I thought I would try to do something kind of funny with the fork. So I went to pick it up, and I kind of, I leaned down, and it's just me and Dawn, the character Dawn, center stage, downstage. So I go to pick up the fork, and I kind of miss it. When you kind of reach for something and I miss it.
Yeah.
And so now, I'm really starting to feel the silence of the audience and the silence of this moment.
It feels like it's been 20 minutes.
Yes, it's getting awkward and what? And now everyone's like, what's the expectation of what's he going to do with that fork that he finally picks up? So I finally get my hands on the fork and I look at her and I just toss it about 30 feet in the air. And it literally falls down, and I turn my hand and I catch it behind my back. And then I show it to her, and I put it on the table,
unicorn.
And I walk off stage.
And the place went crazy, and I was on stage, and one of our other actors was like, What would have happened if he had dropped it? And I looked right at her. I go, he would have figured it out. He would have made it work.
Right.
He would have made it work.
I had a feeling in my gut. I was like, I'm gonna go for this. And if I miss it just is good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose this moment.
Yeah.
This is going to win either way. Because I have three ways I can win it. I can catch it, and it's amazing. I can miss it, and I'll make a beat out of it.
Uh-huh.
Or I miss it, and it kind of all just falls apart. And then I have my castmates to laugh about it with later.
Yeah.
Can't
lose. You were never going to miss that. I believe that. And that's the faith. Mr. Will Swenson.
In Waitress, the only one I can think of is one night, I don't know how it happened, but as Sarah Bareilles was handing me my pie, my elbow.
What a fun sentence to be able to say.
As my good friend Sarah Bareilles was. No. I hit the pie and it flew and landed on the floor, and I'm supposed to eat it 10 seconds later. And I'm also a jerk in the show, so my character would not help her clean it up in any way. So I was just like, damn it. And she was like, Earl. And then she picked it up and put it on the thing, and I just like started eating it. The audience just go, ugh.
You're like, yeah.
It's like a soft pie, too. Probably picked up all kinds of pie.
You did the same thing I did with the fork.
Make it work.
You made it work. See?
Yeah. I've got to ask, any in Priscilla that you recall?
Oh, any mess-ups in Priscilla? I mean,
feel like there's so many moving elements in that there's got to be some
room. Yeah, we had
room.
Wigs and giant headdresses fall off all the time, which it doesn't sound great to describe, but in the moment it's hilarious because we're like 9 feet tall with huge headdress, and they were.
There's nothing quite as fun as somebody's been coming off on stage.
It's pretty great.
To really ruin your suspension of disbelief.
Oh, it's so good.
Were you there the day at Hair when that wig came, when I think it was Paris came out of the trap? He was on for Claude, and he hit his head on the trap door, so Paris had long hair tucked under his short hair wig for Claude at the end, and he's running around, and we're going, Claude is really sad, everybody's crying, and his wig is like back here, and now his little wispy long hairs are starting to fall out, and he's lit from behind, and so he's like, looks like a gremlin, like his hair is all
he's changing.
It was crazy.
Awesome. Into a wolf. All right, friends, we all know we love Broadway, and if you're anything like me, I can only imagine that you also love a great vacation. So why not combine the two and take a Broadway-themed vacation with Playbill? That's right. Playbill Travel has been hosting the biggest fans of Broadway all over the world on incredible week-long cruises that get you up close and personal with the biggest and brightest stars of Broadway. I'm not joking. One night you can hear an amazing and intimate performance by, I don't know, let's say Tony Award winner, an amazing human being, Christine Ebersole. And the next morning, you're going on an incredible excursion through Iceland with her. Check out PlaybillTravel.com to take a look at Playbill's cruise up the Rhone River in France, where guests and Broadway stars had the time of their lives. Playbill Travel has two amazing cruises lined up between now and July of next year, so head to PlaybillTravel.com to book your soon-to-be most favorite vacation ever. All right. One of the things we enjoy so much here at the Broadway Cast is the opportunity we have to connect with theater fans and people who are creating theater all over the country. We do this in our community theater shout out, Collins, and today through social media. So we have some people who have written in questions. Our first question comes from Michaela Ellis 95. That is her Instagram handle, Michaela Ellis 95. Sup, Michaela? My question is for all three, and the question is, what's your favorite number to perform?
Try that one again, Ben.
What to pump a noon to but to perform? What's your favorite number to perform?
Mine?
Yes, Will?
Is the 8.
Ladies and gentlemen, he just stood up and created an 8 shape with his body.
And for everybody else out there, if you want to just do that without the setup, you just go, and for my next number, the 8. And then you do that. So good.
That is good.
That makes me tremendously happy.
Very you.
That is that.
Is 8 your favorite number to perform as well?
It is. I also prefer 8. Not as quite as good. It's a smaller 8.
Yeah. It's a quick 8.
I like some of the ones I'm actually not in. I think some of the... So does the audience.
Do you
probably
like to perform?
My favorite number is I'm never getting rid of. You're never.
And I also like performing a lot of the numbers.
No, I wake up with the negative in my head a lot in the mornings. I like what Bacon can do. Like a lot of the three waitress numbers, I think in our show are really special, and they're really great. I like the finale is fun though, especially because Will does his own. He does a dance for us off stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's very exciting and very high energy. We like that.
I feel like I need more on that.
Well, Earl has his non-triumphant exit after she, spoiler alert, it doesn't work out. And then Will is off stage before his bow, and we all have this big energetic opening number where we're passing pies back and forth. And
closing number. Called opening up.
That's where you got
That's the hiccup. That's fine.
Anyway, he does a big dance. He does a lot of kicks.
Imagine if Molly Ringwald in The Breakfast Club were simultaneously like having a seizure. That's pretty much
what I'm going for.
With
a beard, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Our next question comes from Radit _ Satiawan, and I hope that I said that right, and this is also through Instagram. What elements or features do you look for in scripts that draw or attract you to them?
That's a good question, right? How much nudity?
Right.
If there's vulgarity and irredeemable characters. No challenges. I mean, as I get older, and I am getting older, it's just I love reading something and just going, oh, that would be hard to figure out and interesting. I don't know. I love a good challenge.
She fits.
I don't know. What do I look for? I look for things that I just look for great stories, characters that that have movement, emotional kind of movement, I guess. Things that make me laugh. All a variety of things. Hard to describe, almost.
Yeah, there's some. You're waiting for that pain.
You know it when you see it, I think. Mm-hmm. And I like seeing. I really like the last Earl scene in our show, or not the second to last, I guess, not the hospital scene, the big fight scene, because I like seeing a scene whether they're happy or sad or angry, or I like seeing people act a character go to the absolute pinnacle of an emotion. Like, I think that's really fun to play and play with, because you don't want to play it like a stereotype, like Will was talking about before. You want to make a real person who's clearly gone to the edge of something truthful and honest. Right. I always find that really interesting.
Our last question here is from Rachel Silliers, and that's another Instagram handle. And she wants to know, how do you balance being a dad and an actor, Will?
It's hard. It's tricky. With a good support team and an amazing wife and understanding family, and just reconcile yourself to the fact that you're not going to ever really sleep again. Mm-hmm. You just get very little sleep, and right now I feel like a taxi driver /actor, because I'm just driving kids to soccer practices and piano lessons and recitals and rehearsals, and then it's my turn to come be an actor. So
yeah,
it's tricky but crazy rewarding. It's great.
Chris, how do you have the energy to perform your number every night? Question from Rachel.
Oh, Rachel?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really don't know. I think it comes from the audience. I've thought about that sometimes, because there are times when you know, I also am a father, and it's like another whole thing that's going on in your life.
Yeah.
It becomes the more important thing than this other thing. And so work becomes more like work when you're a dad sometimes.
Yeah.
It becomes a
mouth to feed.
It becomes but it also becomes a place to come and kind of get into what you're doing. But whenever I arrive at the theater and I get myself ready, it's really like when I get on stage and I begin to kind of play what the circumstances are, mm-hmm. and feeling the energy of that audience. Just kind of clicks me into gear to playing this scene. And it really is, it has become like it's a really fun scene to do. It's a fun place to be. That's what's really fun about this particular character. He's really positive, and he's really open, and he's in love, yeah. and to just be able to drop into that every night. That is the thing that kind of gives you the energy. It gives me the energy.
Well, it all translates. It's a great show. It's an absolutely great show, and I loved it. And we are running out of time, unfortunately. So if you haven't gotten a chance to go see Waitress on Broadway, do yourself a huge favor and go see it. It's delicious. Oh, boy. And the tour is taking off all around the country on October 17th. So make sure you see it in your hometown or here on Broadway. Is there anything you have coming up that people should be looking for? See Fitz?
Oh, Well.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, are you gonna?
No, nothing really.
I mean, what? You are shooting like 25 movies right now.
No, no. Well, I'm doing. Okay.
Okay, fine if I must.
Fine if I must. Yeah, no. Always. There's a Netflix thing that I did called Godless, which is coming out in November, where I play a bad guy. And that's really fun. It's a Western.
And then?
And then I'm doing this other TV show called Happy, which I can't get too much into.
Okay.
But I'm on it, and I do some fun, interesting, really weird things on that.
I'm excited.
So that's also coming out in November. Both shows are premiering in November.
Well,
when your birthday is.
It was when my birthday is. And I turned 45.
You're going to be how old?
45, man.
And you could still play Bach today.
I could still play Bach. As I said to you earlier, I think I'd look too young
to even play it.
I can play Bach.
Yeah. Who is the king of that?
The puns.
Will, anything?
Nicely done. I have a little part in this Hugh Jackman movie coming out about P.T. Barnum.
Mm-hmm. Tell him who you play.
I play Hugh Jackman's dad. I play P.T. Barnum's dad.
How about that?
Christmas Day. We're all excited.
That's insane. That's insane.
That's how old I am.
Wolverine's
I'm old
Papa.
Enough to be Hugh Jackman's father. Yeah.
That's huge. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it.
I am too. It comes out on Christmas Day.
That's a big one. That's a big day.
Pretty cool.
Matt, how about you? I know you get around and
I got nothing going on right now.
You play your music, dude.
I do.
I just said dude.
That was really
this is the influence you guys have had on me.
Not only did you say it, it just came out.
Yeah. It made a lot of sense.
Yeah,
it was great.
Thanks, bro. Now I feel weird. I'm sucking harder across my legs.
No, I got nothing going on right now. I'm thrilled to have this job with these guys, and I like working at the theater, and my fiance gets home from the national tour of Fine Neverland in 6 weeks, and I couldn't be happier. So
and
life's
next,
good.
By next year, you guys will be hitched.
We're getting married in 362 days. My app just told me today.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say thank you so much.
I have an app for that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to our incredible panel, C. Fitz, Will Swenson, Matt DeAngelis. We loved having you guys here. I'm a fan of all of yours.
Guess what?
Thanks,
what?
Matt.
We love you.
Yeah.
We do.
We're going to have like a weird bro hug and chug some beers.
Yeah. Yes.
You guys have a matinee to do, don't you?
We can do both.
Huh? Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. We can't.
Fair enough.
Next time, cheese balls.
Cheese balls.
Count on them. Bring them in.
All right.
Thank you guys so much. Have a great show.
Thanks, Ben.
I love you. Bye.
Everybody, bye.
Bye.
Make sure you tune in next week as we go a little bit rogue. We are taking the entire episode to the streets at the red carpet of the Cheetah Rivera Awards and then into the exclusive after party at Sardi's. We talk to all of the big stars. You do not want to miss it. Dance, 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 baby. Make sure you don't miss a single episode and subscribe to us on iTunes. And now you can listen to Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast on Spotify.
And while you're at it, follow us on all social media platforms at The Broadway Cast.